Hey guys, welcome to another edition of the Inside Scoop. My name is Neil Crawford. I'm your host and also the founder of Anytime Soccer Training. If you haven't checked out Anytime Soccer Training, please go to www.anytime-soccer.com to learn more about us. And if you join the mailing list, we'll send you some great information. In addition to that, we'll send you over 50 free ball mastery and juggling videos, which are 100% follow along. And that's because Anytime Soccer Training is a website that we're launching that will feature over 1,000 100% follow-along videos covering all the major areas of individual skill development. If you've been following this show, you've heard me talk about how excited I am with the launch of this product this summer, because it's going to be a way for you to help your child get better at soccer by following a set curriculum of 100% follow-along videos and content. And our mission is to help your child get better in soccer by providing world-class online content, but also to provide you as a parent some actionable information that you can apply today. As soon as you hear that, you can go away and apply it today, that will empower you to support your child. And with that being said, today's show, I'm going to provide another actionable tip. And it's sort of this tip is the golden rule that I stick to when I'm communicating to my boys on the soccer pitch. Now, it's a little heavy and theoretical, so I need you guys to work with me as I try my best to explain it verbally. And if it doesn't come across crystal clear, then I'm going to encourage you to go to the Anytime Soccer Training Facebook group, where I'm going to post a blog post that I wrote about this, and also some videos to help you picture what I'm about to say. All right, so let me begin by saying again that this rule forms the framework of how I communicate to my sons on the soccer pitch. And I developed this rule through a combination of a lot of mistakes, trial and error, and also, and it's also influenced by my professional background. So if you listen to previous shows, you know that I have spent considerable time working in education. And that was formative in helping me understand how children develop and grow from an academic perspective. And I apply some of those principles to training my children in youth soccer and my coaching endeavors as well. But I've also spent a considerable amount of time working as a management accountant. As a matter of fact, I'm a certified management accountant in this regard. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about this so that it can help give you some perspective on why and how I communicate to my children on the soccer pitch. So what management accountants do in general is they help company leaders, CEOs, and managers distill all the noise surrounding their company, all the things they could focus on, and all the things that impact their company. They help them distill all of that stuff down to a few key metrics that the company can measure and evaluate that will help them understand how they're performing. Because if you can imagine, the CEO or any manager of a company could be looking at thousands and has a choice of probably thousands of different things to focus on. Some external, some internal, some combination of both. And what we come in and say is, all right, we're going to look at this stuff and we're going to help you decide and develop models that allow you to focus on the few things that matter, because that's really all the time you have to focus. And those we've determined are the few things that really, really matter. In other words, if you get these things right, then you're going to reach your profitability and operational goals. Now, once we establish those at a high level, right? I wish it was that easy, but once we establish those at a high level, then we start distilling down all the things that people are doing and all the processes that organization has. And we try to identify those most crucial inputs that help that organization really achieve those profitability and performance or operational goals. And so we go around to each department and we look at them and we look at those key inputs that people are doing and those key processes that are in place and try to really make sure that we understand them. And then we go back to the organization and say, hey, if you can get these three or four things right in this department, if you can get these three or four things right in this department, then you're going to ultimately reach your goal. You're going to reach your ultimate goals of profitability and performance. And you can imagine that in these departments, people tend to focus a lot on a lot of the wrong stuff, the stuff that just doesn't matter. And we're not going to go into the weeds on that, but I'm hoping if you're listening, you're probably thinking, why is this guy talking about business and accounting and operations? But I'm hoping you can start seeing some of the themes that are applied to our parent trainers as it relates to youth soccer, that there are a lot of processes in place sometimes that are legacy processes and have no bearing positively or negatively on the organization, but people tend to spend a lot of time on them. And there are certain behaviors that either we want to change or certain behaviors that are irrelevant. And we want to help the organization sort of recalibrate and focus on those things that are most important. And we want to measure those things so that folks know what success looks like, that success is transparent, or their actions are transparent, and the communication is extremely clear. All right, so an example may be we might go to the sales department and say, well, if you guys can make X amount of cold calls per hour, that translates into X percentage growth in revenue. And if you guys can keep wait times on the customer service line below X amount of time, that translates into customer retention. And those are the things that you guys need to focus on. And these are just hypotheticals. And then we may go to the operations department and say, hey, make sure that machine has this amount of oil in it, and we've noticed that if you do that, then you reduce your stoppage time. Again, that's really hypothetical. And if you do that, then we're going to be more efficient and thus more profitable. And these are the things that matter. Right? There's only three or four, and that's what we're going to measure. And these are inputs. So that's what I do professionally. And I know you're probably thinking, if you've made it this far, you're probably thinking, why in the world is this guy talking about management, accounting, and operations as it relates to youth soccer and raising his own children? Well, now I'm about to tell you. But before I tell you exactly why I do it, let's tee up the problems that parent trainers face. And we talked about the fact that parent trainers probably have a few unique challenges that other parents who don't train their own kids have. All right, so the parent trainer recognizes that their child is not going to reach their full potential in soccer, and we've talked about this, if they outsource 100% of the development to someone else. The parent trainer also has a goal. Most of us have this goal. There are a lot of things going on, but most of us have this goal that we want our children to master some fundamental skills that will help them grow and develop. And so now that we have this goal that they need to master these, well, we want them to master these fundamental skills, and we know we can't outsource it to 100% of that process to someone else, that means that we have to step in and do some of it. And remember, though, that, you know, when we step in and do it, yes, we're doing it as a parent. We're forcing them, or we're creating routines now while they're young, but we're doing that as a proxy for ultimately one day them doing it themselves. Right. And then there's a theory of change that we have in the back of our mind. And if you're not familiar with that term, that goes back to my education days. But it basically means that we have a belief on what needs to be done in order for the child, in this case, to master these skills. We have a theory of change that says the child must get a lot of repetitions, a lot of practice, individual practice on that skill if they're going to master it. And so the logical dilemma is, all right, we need the child to master these skills, which means they need to get a lot of repetition on basic fundamental stuff. more than likely they don't want to do it at the level that you need them to do it at. So you're going to get some pushback there, and you're a parent trainer, so you have this parent child relationship. In other words, if the coach asks them to do 100 toe taps, no problem. They're going to knock it out and do it as quickly as they can. But if the parent trainer asks them to do 100 toe taps, you know, the conversation can go anywhere. And we have all experienced that. And what many parents do that are not parent trainers is they just throw their hands up and say, well, I'm not going to go there with my child. I want everything to be absolutely fun as relates to soccer. So I'm not going to try to work with them on my own because that causes them stress and me stress. That's what many parents do. And guess what? There's nothing wrong with making that decision. But as the parent trainer, we know if we make that decision, then we're not going to reach our goal that we've talked about, which is really helping their child reach their full potential in soccer. So we look for resources, hopefully like this one, that are helpful in helping us understand what is the best approach that we can use to help our child get better in soccer without what? Driving them crazy. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about. So I wanted to tee that framework up as well, that there's a natural conflict between the parent and the child as it pertains to training them that we have to work through in turn and ensure that's positive and that it's not negative. Okay. So now, how do I marry my professional experience that I have as a management and accountant? How do I apply that to what I do on the soccer pitch with my boys? And like I said, I take the lessons I've learned professionally and I apply them on the soccer pitch. And I've coined a phrase that I use to do that. And I call that term positive constraints. I'm doing a lot of talking here and we're hopefully getting to the punchline, but I really want to tee this up so that you can picture exactly what I'm talking about. So from my management accounting experience and from the dilemma that I have as a parent trainer and the experience that I've gained, I've created this concept and this way of thinking, this framework, this communication model, if you will, and I call it positive constraints. And at its core definition, a positive constraint is a constraint, is a rule that I put in place dealing with training that changes the behavior that I'm looking for in my children in a positive way or gets a positive result from the training exercise. Again, this is probably difficult to picture. It is going to be easier for us to understand once I give an example. So we've all seen the parent who posts a video of their child juggling maybe 500 times, and that child in this case is only using their strong foot. And there's always a well or always a you got to do this parent who takes the time to go into the chat and tell the parent that the child should use their weak foot as well, right? And oh, by the way, guys, don't be that parent. I mean, when a person posts that kind of stuff, they're normally just celebrating their child. And I think that's an opportunity just to celebrate the child. I don't think they need the critical feedback at that moment, but that's just me. So anyways, they post a video and they're juggling maybe 500 times with one foot. And then another parent chimes in and says, oh, they need to use their weak foot. And normally the parent will respond, yeah, this is something that we're working on, but it's pretty difficult and the child just won't do it and I don't want to frustrate them too much. And I totally get that because that's kind of where I used to be until I came up with this positive constraint idea. And so I'm going to use that as an example of, I'm going to use this dilemma as an example of how I use positive constraints. So I have two sons, one is left-footed and one is right-footed. For the purposes of this, let's assume I'm working with my right-footed son. If I tell my right-footed son to go out there and start juggling for 50, go out there and give me 50 juggles, and I leave it to his own devices, then naturally he's only going to juggle with his right foot, right? But I know my goal is for my son to be two-footed, and I'm using juggling as one of the many tools to help him become confident on both feet, so I want him to juggle with his left foot. Well, immediately our incentives are not aligned because he wants to only juggle with his strong foot. That's what he feels most comfortable doing. And I want him to do juggle with both feet. And so I'm actually effectively asking him to make this exercise harder than it otherwise needs to be. So we have a misalignment of incentives. So what the positive constraints framework does is it effectively says, well, how can I align our incentives by using the process instead of my using verbal instructions? Because if I use verbal instructions, I'll probably frustrate him. So what I used to do, for example, before I came up with the positive constraints, is I used to say, my son's name is Adam. Adam, you have to juggle with your left foot as well. No measurement there, just a verbal command. You have to juggle with both feet. And maybe he would do a couple with his right, and then maybe one with his left, and he'd go back to his right and do 10, and then maybe one with his left. And then I would say, no, I need you to juggle alternating with your left and right foot. And then he would get frustrated, and I would get frustrated because I would feel as if he wasn't really trying. And that was the mistake I used to make. Now, I use this as an opportunity to improve the system. So I communicate to Adam in this way. Okay, Adam, you have to do 50 juggles, all right? But you cannot use your right foot more than 2 times in a row. So after every 2 juggles, you have to juggle with your left foot. All right? And if you do not juggle with your, if you juggle with your right foot more than twice in a row, so 3 times, every time you do that, I add 10 juggles to the exercise. All right, so now our incentives are aligned again, right? Adam wants to finish. He doesn't want to juggle more than 50 times. At least he doesn't in his mind. And for me, I want him to juggle with both feet, and I want him to try his hardest to do that. So now our incentives are aligned, all right? So he may go off and do it, okay? And I'm watching him. But Adam's pretty smart. So now he juggles, 2 times and stops. Then he juggles another 2 times and stops, and then he juggles another 2 times and stops. So he's juggling with his right foot, and maybe he's using his left foot as well, like I've asked him to. But now he's not getting the volume of juggles I need him to do in one time, or at least what I think he's capable of. Now, before I came up with positive constraints, what would I have done? I would have came and said, Adam, man, I know you can juggle better than that. I've seen you juggle better than that. And if you want to be a great soccer player, you're going to have to juggle more than that. You got to always put forth maximum effort. And I'm, and we know where this story leads. He's frustrated and I'm frustrated. So instead, I come up with another positive constraint. And I'll say, okay, Adam, well, you have 5 cumulative attempts to reach 50 juggles. All right. So now we have 2 constraints. We have the left foot constraint where you have to use your left foot at least every, you can't juggle with your right foot more than twice in a row. And now we've added another constraint, which is if you're doing the math, each of your attempts has to average at least 10 juggles, right? And I will count the attempts and he will generally count the juggles. So let's say he does one, he gets 10, another he gets 15. So his average is somewhere in between 10 and 15. Okay. Maybe something 12 and a half or something like that. Well, he gets 5 of those attempts. And let's assume for the sake of argument, he doesn't make it. So he only gets to 40 juggles and he uses up all his attempts. Well, the way this particular game will work, and you can set it up how you want, but this is what I recommend. The next round, he gets 10 cumulative attempts to get the same 50 juggles. So again, we've accomplished a couple of things. If he can't average 10 juggles, I want him to practice more. But I know if I verbally tell him to practice more, it's going to frustrate him because I'm his dad. So I need to make it where the system or the game forces him to practice more, it's telling him to practice more, not me. But at the same time, I want to preserve his mental side of things. So the next round is a little bit easier because I'm not really trying to tear him down. I just want him to get a few more reps. So I'm going overboard saying, hey, you get 10 more attempts. Well, 5 more attempts, 10 attempts in total. So now his average only needs to be 5. And we both, now our incentives are aligned. Again, if he doesn't get it, I don't double the next time, but I might add 5 more attempts. So the next time, if he doesn't get it, it's 15. And this is also a great way to implement stretch goals in your child, because they know if they don't get it, the next time it's going to get a little bit easier. And that's also a way for you to calibrate what their level is, and because now you know they're trying as hard as they can. All right. But let's say, Adam is being lazy on this particular day, or he's figured this thing out. He's like, man, if I just juggle a few times, really quickly and don't get to 50, I will eventually get 10 more and maybe 15 more attempts. All right. Again, you're the management accountant, you're the parent trainer in this regard, and you're watching the system, and there's a behavior there that you want to change. Now, I could say, Adam, you know you can do better than that. You know how the game works, so I need you to try your best. No, again, there are very few. I actually don't even remember any behaviors that I want my children to exhibit on a regular basis on the soccer pitch. As it relates to training that I can't measure, right? And I can't explain to them in a measurable way, in a transparent way, without getting upset. There are a few. So what I would do in this case is say, well, you have to get a minimum of 30 juggles, or I'll just use another number. You got to get a minimum of 25 juggles in your first 3 attempts, or you have to start over. Again, so now there's a minimum he has to do. So we just constantly refining it. All right, let's say that I'm anticipating the juggling session the last 10 minutes, but every time Adam makes a mistake, he takes his time and he looks at his watch and he wants to talk and he wants to do all these things. He's taking too long. All right, well, I'll add another constraint. Now you got 60 seconds or 2 minutes or whatever the number is to get this done. So I'll set my stopwatch, right? And if you don't get it done, you have to start over, and if you don't use all your cumulative attempts, you have to start over and you at zero again. All right. So that speeds up the process. And over time, he'll get better. And over time, I'll add more and more constraints. So another example of a constraint is once he gets better at this, let's say he's able to juggle, but he's moving and traveling all throughout the yard, or he's kicking the ball far, far away every time he gets to the final juggle that he can do. So on the 10th juggle, he wants to get that one extra one in, and he kicks it far away. And if you work with your child on juggling, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I don't want this, because I want the session to be very efficient. I don't want him to get in the habit of kicking the ball as far as he can away and chasing it just to get that one extra juggle. So what do? I just create a box. All right, Adam, every time the ball goes out of that box, you lose one of your attempts or you have to do 10 more. Again, our incentives now are aligned. And immediately, if you can picture this, his last touch will become much lighter because he now knows it can't go out of the box. And let me pause for a second and say, you have to know your child, right? So the purposes of these are not to make the game so difficult that they can't achieve the goal. You are just really trying to align incentives. And let me take another step back and say, all right, if you're listening to this, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, you're just gamifying this particular exercise. And I mean, everybody does that. What's the new tip? Well, there's two things. I don't like using the word gamify because that kind of implies that the training sessions are going to be fun in the traditional sense. And I'm kind of here to tell you that, yes, there are things you can do to introduce fun into training. But if you're working with your child on these basic skills day in and day out, it probably won't be fun to them in the traditional sense of the word. And I challenge anybody to introduce me to a child who wants to practice rudimentary skills in any vocation day in and day out. at any considerable level of consistency, and it's fun to them. I've never actually seen it. So please, if you have someone like that, I'd love to hire them for anytime soccer training, because that's what I spend a lot of my time thinking about, is how to market to folks to convince them that, you know, 10 or 15 minutes a day will have a profound impact on their child's success on and off the pitch. So it's not going to be fun in the traditional sense. You can do things to spice it up, but at the end of the day, it's kind of hard work, and that's why you're creating these routines and you're trying to be transparent so it's not overwhelming to the child. All right, so that's an aside to say that we're not gamifying it in that regard to make the child enjoy the session more. What we're doing is we're adding clarity and transparency, and we're making the game and the behaviors that we want actionable and measurable. And again, the second point is we know our child and we know what they're capable of, so we're not trying to do it in a way that makes it so hard. And finally, we're trying to remove ourselves, the parent, away from the equation and put the onus on the system. So as a matter of fact, in this whole juggling routine, I just become a referee. I'm a silent referee. All I have to do is say the numbers. I don't give any instruction. I just say the numbers. And believe it or not, another thing too, when you add these constraints, you drastically see how the child's behavior drastically improves, and you begin to notice that they start self-correcting. So again, the last touch, instead of kicking it 50 yards away, they start with a light touch. I didn't have to say anything because the game takes care of itself. All right, so let me get my train of thought together. So we have Adam, and we have a few constraints. We have the time constraint, which ensures that he does it as quickly as he can. We have a constraint that says he needs to get a minimum threshold in order to move on to the next round. We have a constraint that says he can't use his strong foot more than twice in a row, or he's penalized. And we have a constraint that says he needs to average at least 10, or he has to do another round. And all these constraints align my incentives. Some of them are not totally aligned to his incentives, but they kind of are. Because even the time constraint, over time, he's learned that he doesn't want to be out there all day. So I don't want to take 10 minutes to do something that only takes 2 minutes. Okay. Now, you may be thinking, boy, that's a lot to remember. That's a lot to lay on to a child. Well, again, you're working with them day in and day out. So these constraints become part of your routine, and they are easy for you both to remember. That's number one. So when I do a juggling session with my sons, I immediately lay out a box, or they create the box based on their level of skill. My younger son's box is huge. My older son's box is the size of maybe almost like a 1 foot box. They know they have a few minutes to do it. They know they have to reach a certain threshold, and then I set a number, right? And so it's not that hard to remember. And now let me even also take it to another level so you guys can really understand the details here. Their tendencies when my older one especially started juggling, where I wanted him to juggle just with his laces. I didn't want any bad habits to form, and I wanted him to have total dominion and total control over the ball in the air. So if you work with kids juggling, you'll notice that it's easier for them to sometimes tap the ball with the inside of their foot. And they're not doing that because they intentionally are doing it. They're doing it because it's easier. It's a larger surface area. And I didn't want my son to do that. So again, I could step in and say, don't use the side of your foot. No, again, it's just another constraint. Every time you use the side of your foot, I add 5 more juggles. Then when we get to the end in this particular game, and you can create, you once you understand this framework, you can create any systems that you want. And you have to create systems and rules and constraints, if you will, that are adaptable. So then once we get to those 10 extra ones or those 20 extra ones, it kicks in again, right? You got to do it in order to get out of these 20. You got to follow the same rules. You have to kick it no more than twice with your right foot. You can't use the inside of your foot. You get a certain amount of time, you got to get a certain amount of minimum, a certain minimum, and so forth. And maybe in that round, every time you make a mistake, there's you have to do 5 extra juggles. And eventually you work yourself out. And Dad is happy because he's done a lot more juggles than he normally would do. The child is happy because he knows exactly what he needs to do, and he knows that if he doesn't meet it, he'll get some extra attempts and so on and so forth. And it's not gamifying in the sense that I'm making it fun. It's adding a level of accountability, measurability, and transparency to the process. And I'm able to do that in a way that I'm keeping calm and not having to speak or talk too much. And this is a juggling exercise, but you can apply this to all the training behaviors that you want. So another example, and there are unlimited amount of examples, is let's say the figure eight dribbling drills, which again, we will have nearly 100 figure eight dribbling videos in the Anytime Soccer Training product. But if you don't know what I'm talking about, that's where you lay 2 cones down. And in this particular example, in order for me to accurately implement the constraints, I have to evaluate how well my son can do. So I know by heart now that if I lay 2 cones out 2 feet apart and ask my son to do a dribbling drill for 30 seconds through them, he can get to he can get 16 points. So he can get to 16 cones or get to a cone 16 times in 30 seconds. So when he gets to the first cone, that's 1. When he gets back, that's 2 and 3 and so forth. And he can get 16. I know this. So instead of me telling him, hey, Adam, you got to go faster. I simply say, hey, you got to get 17 points in this series. And if you don't, in this 30 seconds, if you don't, you got to do it again. Again, our incentives are aligned. And he goes off and he tries the best he can. Now, if he doesn't, let's say he gets 16 and a half, and this is just a tip from me to you. If he's trying his best, I teach them it's not really about you getting 17. It's about you trying your best. And I typically just let it slide. Or if he's working on a new skill, though, and he doesn't get it, then I will explain, hey, in this case, I'm going to ask you to do it again, not because you've done anything wrong, but I need you to get another rep in because this is where I want you to get. I want you to be at 17. Boom, we're done. Conversation is over. That's a lot different conversation than, hey, you got to go faster. You need to go faster. He's frustrated and I'm frustrated. And remember, I know exactly how fast he can do it in 30 seconds, 2 feet apart exactly. Now, here's another thing, though, because remember, I'm teaching him how to train himself. So once I set him up and he knows what he's doing and I hit play on the video, I may watch a couple of rounds and then Dad will go for his walk around the pitch while he's taking care of business. Now, my son is pretty studious, so I don't want him trying to get 17 attempts every time, feeling guilty and exhausting himself over a 10-minute video. So then I explained to him, listen, you're not going to go max speed every time. Nobody expects that. So I want you to stay in the range of 17 and 12. When you're feeling tired, just get at least 12 and move on. And now we've communicated. He knows exactly what he needs to do, and then we're done. And I've been doing these positive constraints with him for 6 years. So now they're just a way of talking. They're not really designed to punish him or get the most out of him in that regard. It's just a way of communicating to him in a way that's measurable, actionable, that he and I both understand. When you first start, you will be adding constraints because you're really trying to course correct behavior without driving the kid crazy. Now, I'm not necessarily trying to course correct. My son is 10. I'm not trying to course correct behavior from my older son. I'm just aligning our communication and our incentives. Well, my younger son, on the other hand, I spent a lot of time course correcting. That's a fancy way of saying trying to get him to cooperate without losing my cool. Which brings me to another point. Hey, guys, I'm not Mr. Rogers on the soccer pitch. And sometimes, as a matter of fact, when I listen to my own podcast, I'm thinking, ooh, I don't want to give the people the impression that I'm perfect because, oh, God, by no means am I. As a matter of fact, You know, like all parents, sometimes I lose my temper, raise my voice, communicate the wrong way. But I will say that I try to be reflective, and I'm so much better at this than I was even yesterday, let alone 3 years ago. And so a lot of these rules are coming at you because of trial and error, an error with a big E. And so initially going, I've learned the hard way that you just, that the young children especially, you just can't appeal to the any sense of logic, and you're not necessarily going to be able to motivate them through words, trying to convince them that if they can do this and do this at this speed, it's going to help them in the game, some fictitious game that they, some game that they don't even know exists yet, sometime in the future. I found that to be a losing battle. What I found to be a winning battle is saying, this is what we need to get done. This is how I want you to do it. This is how I'm going to measure it. And here's a reasonable penalty if you don't make it. And here is a reward if you do. I found that sort of to be the best formula for me. But hey, I'm just one dad. So what I'm going to do in future series is we're going to bring experts in who look at children across all the different ages and all the different personalities and help us distill, if you will, some key lessons that we as parent trainers can use to help motivate our children to get the most out of training without driving them crazy. So in summary, let's recap before I let you guys go. My professional experience is in helping CEOs and managers distill a whole lot of noise into some actionable metrics that the entire organization can get behind. And then we go out through the organization and we convince them to adopt a few key inputs that drive the organization forward. And I apply those same lessons to youth soccer. I distill all those behaviors, all the things I want all the potential things that my child can be doing. I distill those down to a few behaviors that I'm looking for. And then I present them to in a framework, using a positive constraint framework that allows him, in this case, to get those few inputs that I'm looking for. And I measure it in a transparent way, and I set the system up to align our incentives. And again, this is different from creating a game, because it's not necessarily designed to have fun. We're not doing a crossbar challenge where I'm like, well, let's see if you can hit the crossbar 2 times out of 12 balls or something. That's a fun game. This is a framework we're using to align our incentives and distill our communication down to a few key points in a way that doesn't frustrate a child or frustrate yourself. So I hope that you found this tip helpful. And what I'm going to encourage you to do is the next time you're on the training pitch with your child, I hope that you will say, all right, you'll observe and you'll come up with a few constraints that you want to use to help improve that behavior instead of losing your temper or trying to appeal to some other, I don't know, logic that they don't necessarily buy into. And finally, folks, I try my best to deliver these constraints in advance. So I've observed them. I see sort of what they're able to do. I encourage them to do what I need them to do. But then in a calm way, I start introducing these constraints in advance. So I threw a lot at you. I actually wrote a blog post about this, but it's so theoretical and so hard to picture that I thought I would do a podcast on it, because it is actually extremely important. I also did a video series on this, very crude, but if you take the time to watch it, you'll see what I'm talking about, and I'm going to post that as well. And in the video series that I'm going to post, which is part of the blog post, you're going to see that I use these positive constraints to help my older son juggle with a tennis ball in a way that, again, doesn't drive him crazy because if I asked him to juggle with a tennis ball when he first started, and he was just learning how to juggle, period, he would have found this to be overwhelming and frustrating. But by me saying, hey, you got, you know, 10 attempts to get 50, and then obviously he's not going to be able to do it. All right, 15, he's not going to be able to do it. 20, then he does it. And it also allows us to measure his improvement. It used to be 10 attempts. Now it's only 5 attempts. Now it's just 1 attempt. So that's another, there's another added benefit to that. So I use these to implement stretch goals without driving him crazy. And I use these to align our incentives. And I keep saying this again. I'd be very interested in your feedback on models, frameworks, or anything you use that has helped you communicate more effectively to your child to achieve that goal of helping them get better, but at the same time, not driving them crazy. Feel free to drop me an email at neil@anytime-soccer.com. Again, it's Neil, N-E-I-L, at anytime-soccer.com. If you to share your tips or check out the Anytime Soccer Facebook group, and please drop your tips there. And if you like this content, if you like this tip, please share it with other coaches and parent trainers on social media or however they get their podcast. I really would appreciate it. So that wraps up the show. This is Neil Crawford, the Soccer Dad. Thank you so much for listening. Let's get better together.